Good morning, it's 9:30. This is a reading of the Green Valley News for Monday, May 4th. Mark DeGroft with you here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today's weather is going to be a high of 82 degrees, winds out of the southwest 15 to 25 miles per hour, although higher wind gusts are possible. Tonight, overcast with rain showers at times, a low around 60, winds out of the south-southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour, and there's a 60% chance of rain. Tomorrow, partly cloudy skies with gusty winds developing during the afternoon and a high of 76 degrees. A wanted California gang member was arrested by the Pima County Sheriff's Department on Thursday at a home in Suarita. According to the PCSD, the Ventura Police Department asked for detectives' assistance in apprehending Jacob Pulido. He was wanted in connection with a domestic violence incident and had an outstanding felony parole at large. Warrant. Members of the PCSD Fugitive Investigations Unit located Pulido at a home in Suarita, and the Pima Regional SWAT team took him into custody without incident. Pulido will also face additional weapons possession-related charges stemming from his arrest in Arizona. The Pima County Board of Supervisors will consider a resolution on Tuesday that will oppose a proposed TEP rate increase and instead endorses an alternative put forward by Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays. The board will vote on the resolution during a special meeting to be held virtually on Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. The meeting will be live-streamed on the county's YouTube page. The public can email cobmail@pima.gov to submit comments. Board Chair Jen Allen, whose District 3 includes West Suarita, Amato, and Aravaca, has brought the item forward. TEP has proposed a rate increase under review with the Arizona Corporation Commission that would increase customer bills by 14% if it's approved. TEP reported the rates would take effect in September and would raise consumer bills by $16 per month on average for median usage and customers consuming 638 kilowatt hours per month. TEP's last rate increases were 6% in 2021, 10% in 2023. TEP reported the 14% increase would begin recovery of a $1.7 billion in grid investments made since 2021, and it reflects the higher costs that we've absorbed. Just an example, copper prices that were $2.72 a pound in 2019 are $4.90, which is an 80% increase, TEP reported. Similarly, hot steel prices are up 40%. TEP also reported that a large substation transformer was $1.4 million in 2021, but goes for nearly $2.5 million today. The county's resolution under consideration Tuesday would endorse a proposed 4% rate increase that Mays recommended and would direct staff to support the Attorney General's office in the rate case intervention. Mays' office reported in February that TEP's proposed 14% rate increase was unjustified and could be 4% while maintaining reliable service and a strong credit rating. Her office at TEP is asking customers to pay shareholder profits that are higher than the cost to main service, adding that about $148 million annually would go from Tucson families to shareholders due to that increase. The three-week hearing began on April 22nd at the ACC's downtown Tucson office, and that was located at 400 West Congress Street in room 222. The hearing started at 9 a.m. and continued through May 12th with no hearing scheduled for May 7th. Hud Bay Minerals, owners of the proposed Copper World mining project that's east of Suarita and Green Valley, bought 160 acres of state trust land at auction on Thursday. The land, purchased for $993 million, will allow the mine to store tailings about 1 mile farther south from homes in the Corona de Tucson area, this according to Hud Bay. Hud Bay has attempted to buy the land for more than 4 years, despite opposition from Pima County and the activist group Save the Scenic Santa Ritas, which led a protest during the auction off-site. Revenue from the sale of trust goes to public education. On Thursday, SSSR filed a special action lawsuit in Pima County Superior Court, and it claimed that the Arizona State Land Department changed the auction location without giving the public proper notice. The suit asked for the auction to be nullified. In 2025, Hudbay obtained an air quality permit, the last of three state permits that are needed to move forward with mining operations in the Santa Rita Mountains. Your grocery bill keeps getting bigger, but you may not have noticed that. Simultaneously, some food packages are actually getting smaller. A new analysis by the website Investigators Observer tracked the prices and package sizes of America's most popular grocery brands from 2020 through 2026. A financial technology company found that the average family of four now spends $741 more a year than in 2020 for the exact same groceries. And $41 of that increase is attributed to package size decreases. It's called shrinkflation, when brands don't just raise prices but put less product in the same package in hopes that you won't notice it. No one is surprised by growing prices these days, but the issue with shrinkflation is the science around it, said Sam Burgi, who's a senior analyst at Investors Observer. You can clearly see when gas prices grow or rent rises, but in this case you don't notice when you start to overpay for less. It lands hardest on those who can't afford the least. In 2021, a 15.5-ounce bag of nacho cheese Doritos cost $4.79. In 2022, the same bag cost $5.99. In 2023, the price stayed the same, but the bag shrank to 14.5 ounces, and it now costs $6.69. In 2022, a 24-ounce box of Kellogg's Frosted Flakes breakfast cereal was $3.98. By 2024, the same family-sized box shrank to 21.7 ounces and cost $5.48. In 2025, the price fell 9% to $4.98, but the size remained at 21.7 ounces. And prices for M&Ms rose steadily from 2020 through 2023. In 2024, candy maker Mars shrank the bag from 19.2 ounces to 18.8 ounces, while prices continue to rise. And by 2026, a bag of M&Ms cost $9.49, up from $4.99 in 2020. It's a lot more difficult to notice the changes in size than in price, Burgi said. Investigator Observer's findings are based on retail shelf prices and net weight in ounces collected for each product from Wayback Machine snapshots of Target.com and Walmart product and category pages. Current retail prices were collected from Target.com and Walmart.com in February. Annual purchase frequencies for a household of four were derived from national per capita consumption data and scaled to four people. Coca-Cola tells the most complete shrinkflation story in the analysis because it sells the same drink in several sizes at several different prices. A 2-liter bottle of Coke cost $1.89 in 2020. Today it's $2.79, which is a 48% increase over 6 years. And the 12-pack of cans, the format most American families reach for, jumped from $4.89 to $8.89, an 82% price increase since 2020. Coke in mini cans is the costliest option. Coke aggressively pushes its 7.5-ounce portion control format in recent years, marketing it as a smarter and healthier choice. But consumers who buy the 10-pack of mini cans pay $6.99 for 126% more than ounce than shoppers who buy the 2-liter bottle. In January of 2026, Coke expanded the individual mini can format to convenience stores nationwide, and the mini can retail for $1.29 each, which works out to 12.5 cents per ounce. Compare that with 3 cents per ounce for a 2-liter bottle. The simplest advice we can give any Coca-Cola drinker right now, buy the 2-liter, Borgi said. Our data shows it's the best format by a wide margin, and that gap has only grown since 2020. Ben & Jerry's ice cream is one of the brands that hasn't touched its packaging. Between 2020 and 2026, it raises price per pint by 10.7% from $4.69 to $5.19. Breyers and Häagen-Dazs also didn't increase the size of their products and ended 2026 with prices 11% and 17% higher, respectively, than in 2020. No shrinking, no two-step strategy was done, the report said. just modest, transparent prices that track broadly with inflation. It's 20 minutes till 10. Parks and Rec spokeswoman Anissa Ramirez said the survey feedback was overwhelmingly positive, snagging 82% support for the plan to build the county's first dog park. The negative remarks primarily expressed concerns related to the proposed location or requests for alternative amenities that are outside of the department's purview, Ramirez said. The dog park, which the county has already started building, will be on the southeastern corner of Canoa Preserve Park at 3500 South Camino de la Canoa. The park is south of the GVR Pickleball Center. The dog park will have two fenced areas separated by dog size. The small dog area would be on one-third of an acre, and the large dog area would sit on a half acre. The planned surface area will remain natural landscape using existing earth materials, similar to other Pima County dog parks such as Manzanita, George Mayo, Ann Day, and Brandy Fenton, Ramirez said. The master plan also found Green Valley was in need of passive recreation space, shaded trails, weekend access to the historic Canoa Ranch, and equitable park access. But the master plan found Green Valley residents benefited from Green Valley Recreation and Canoa Preserve Park when identifying Vail as the area with the most significant gap, saying that there are no regional scale or comparable public park facilities nearby. Green Valley also has a 130-acre Canoa Hills Trails Park and the historic Canoa Ranch, with both leaving the parks and rec inventory after the county created the Conservation Lands and Resource Department back in July of 2024. Parks and Rec Director Victoria Piera said in February, when the county opened the survey, that the dog park would fill a gap for Green Valley residents driving to dog parks in Sorita, which has one in Quail Creek, Veterans Municipal Park, and another at Animax Park. This is our first new amenity on the heels of completing our Parks and Recreation Master Plan, Paget Pierre said. Back in the 1940s, the U.S. military didn't want its soldiers getting hurt playing football. So instead of tackling each other, soldiers started pulling a flag off each other's belts in a game they called touch-and-tail football. The problem was, sometimes the refs couldn't tell if an opponent pulled the flag or if it simply fell out of the player's belt. A Sorita elementary school teacher and coach changed all that in the 1950s, and now the Santa Cruz Valley Historical Society is on a quest to get him international acclaim at the 2028 Olympics in Los Angeles. In their mind, Porter Wilson is the founder of flag football. He and Norman Adams designed a ball and socket device that attaches to a plastic belt and makes a loud popping noise when a player rips a vinyl flag out of it. He and Adams obtained the first patent for the flag tag device in 1963, and Wilson would go on to obtain numerous other patents for flag football devices. Wilson, who's a World War II veteran, worked as a Sorita Elementary School physical education teacher from 1952 through 1988. He passed away of cancer at the age of 75 in 2000. According to local historians, Wilson was a beloved figure who created flag football and who made it his mission to ensure that Sorita children learn how to swim after a small boy had died in a flooded gravel pit near what is now Sorita Road. He would drive kids into Tucson after school for swim lessons at the YWCA, and then later began a summer swimming lesson program after convincing the school district to build its own pool. Oscar Gomez, who's 80 years old, remembers Wilson taking kids to get ice cream after the swim lessons, often paying 10 cents for those who couldn't afford it. Gomez also remembers watching Wilson jotting down new rules for flag football as they occurred during games. Gomez is among the people featured in a historical site YouTube video honoring Wilson, a video they hope will soon be shown to the Olympic Committee in the hopes that they'll name him the father of flag football. Flag football men's and women's teams will be played at the Olympics for the first time in 2028. Historical Society President Mary Chernosky and her board have been busy working to get Wilson the credit they believe he deserves. In addition to creating the video, the Society will unveil a historical marker near SUSD's Learning Center includes Nurturing Kids building on Wilson's 101st birthday on Friday, May 8th. Many years ago, the district swimming pool, where 15,000 kids learned to swim, stood where the LINK building now stands. Town officials, school district officials, and Diane Burleson, the president and founder of the International Women's Flag Football Association, will be on hand. Burleson had greatly admired Wilson because he recognized flag football was a sport and it could be enjoyed by women as well as men. And as soon as she found out about the unveiling ceremony, she immediately said she would fly out from Florida to be there. She also offered to come 5 days early so she could put on a couple of clinics, one including for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on South Camino de las Quintas in Suarita. She chose to put on a clinic at Suarita Middle School because the school has separate physical education classes for girls, unlike most other SUD-SD schools. Burleson said we'll also be putting on a clinic at the Continental because they already have a girls' team set up, she said. She'll also be speaking at Pueblo High School in Tucson because they, too, already have flag football teams. Chernosky said the society hopes to garner a lot of media attention next week so they can include it along with the video that they intend to send to the Olympic Committee. A series of coincidences that give the society some hope as far as the Olympics. The society gave a Porter Wilson presentation to Suarita Wins, a collaborative effort between SUSD and local businesses, and the Pima County Pima Community College Dean of Athletics, Edgar Soto, was there as well, Chernosky said. Soto was so impressed, he introduced them to former University of Arizona football coach Tim Kish, who is president of the Southern Arizona chapter of the National Football Foundation. As it turns out, Kish knows people who know Casey Wasserman, who is the chairman of the LA Organizing Committee for the 2028 Olympic Games. Soto is planning to attend Friday's unveiling, and Kish has said he hopes to make it, although he has a big commitment the following day. I believe in kind of karma, or whatever you want to say, how things come together universally, Chernosky said. Call it the hand of God, whatever you want to call it, all of a sudden, just all of the pieces started to fall in place. I mean, who knew this would lend to this little talk? They truly believe Wilson deserves to be recognized as the father of flag football. In 1999, Wilson was inducted into the U.S. Flag Tag League of Hall of Fame, and Burleson's group created a Porter Wilson Award. While no single person invented flag football outright, Porter Wilson's contribution was revolutionary, Chernosky said on the video. He helped define the equipment that made non-contact football practical, standardized, and enduring. Santa Rita Fire District's monthly board of directors meeting was busy on Wednesday, with a promotion ceremony and multiple crews recognized for saving lives. Green Valley resident James M. Garrison Sr., his partner Jane Gitras, and his sister, Gail Gerson, thanked Station 151 crews for saving Gerson's life after he had a heart attack on the pickleball courts at the GVRE Center. Gerson said two nurses were playing pickleball that day and started CPR. First responders arrived just a couple of minutes later. I'm here today only because of that rapid response and the training and doing exactly what they were trained to do, so thank you, Gerson said. A tearful Giatris also expressed her appreciation to acting captain Aaron Carranza and firefighters Wolf Tubach, Austin Wimberly, Caitlin Fillmore, Matthew Buras, and Neil Haringa. The thing that impressed me the most about the team is that they really did work as a team, she said. I was watching, of course, and they took each turn speaking and they listened to each other and took in what each other was saying. And I think that says a lot to your training program and your leadership. So keep that up and don't cut the expenses on the training. SRFD Chief Chuck Wunder and AMR Representatives Jacob Dahlstra and Austin Hawkins also honored crews from Stations 155 and 152. According to Wunder, EMT Antonio Leon, paramedic Nicholas Starks, firefighters Jonathan Borkman and Gavin Cristiano, and Captain Randy Creighton saved the life of a 33-year-old man who went into cardiac arrest in February. Wonder said EMT Steve Jimenez, medic student Leah Simpson, firefighter Daniel Silva, engineer Josh Cavill, Captain Michael Landman, and paramedic Chris Luter saved the life of a 74-year-old man who went into cardiac arrest while choking recently. The crew's actions reflected the highest standards of professionalism, clinical excellence, and dedication to the community we serve, Wonder said. During the meeting, the board and SRFD leadership also celebrated the recent promotion of Battalion Chief Joseph O'Brien to Deputy Chief. O'Brien's 14-year-old sons, Aiden and Steve, and his wife, Adrienne, an SRFD nurse practitioner, pinned his new badge to his uniform. Chief O'Brien has served in the acting role for the past year and a half. During this time, he had the opportunity to fully experience both challenges and opportunities that come with his position, Wonder said. This isn't an easy job, and throughout that process, he's impressed me with his patience and perseverance. He's approached it the right way, like a sponge, soaking up everything he can to prepare himself for lead at this level. The chief said O'Brien leads with integrity, and no one can miss his enthusiasm for the fire service. He shows up every day with energy and commitment, and the attitude has a ripple effect across the entire organization, Wonder said. Every day, O'Brien greets him with a loud, "Let's go," Wonderson said. Wonder also presented Captain Manuel Valencia with the service ribbon that marked his 20 years with the district and thanked firefighter paramedic Ray Fontes for creating the district's new challenge coin. During the business portion of Wednesday's meeting, O'Brien said the district responded to a record number of calls in March, 1,737 calls. The average per day was 56. 49% or 854 were EMS calls, and of those, 279 involved patients who had fallen, 139 who were sick, and 52 who had chest pains. 48% of the patients were taken to Northwest Medical Center in Suarita, he said. The number of snake calls increased from 117 in February to 417 in March, he said. O'Brien also told the board that the district had an amazing opportunity in March, thanks to the Pascoyaki tribe. He explained that the tribe is demolishing several commercial buildings in order to build their new Casino Sol Vahitam at Grant Road and Interstate 10. So we've got to send our ladder companies up there, and for an entire day they got to do roof work, breach real doors, cut open real roofs, break window real windows. It was an invaluable training, and our hats are off to Pascua for letting us come up and join them, and the crew loved it, O'Brien said. In other matters, the board passed a resolution calling for the election of two governing board members in November. Chair Tom Allen, who has been on the board since 2013, is departing, as is Bob Simmons, who joined in 2022. The board has tentatively approved a $24.5 million budget for fiscal year 27. A public hearing on the budget is on May 27th. Jose Cardenas thought about how he copes with life's challenges on Thursday morning as he sat at his home workstation waiting for his 15-a-day pill regimen to kick in and stabilize the shrinking and energy due to loss of Parkinson's. Smile, he said, working up the strength to situate himself in the chair. And with Parkinson's, it's hard to smile. Your face muscles freeze and people think you're mad at them, but I try to smile as much as possible. Cardenas, who's 62 years old, has hit rough patches like most people, but he also had to grapple with losing his job due to Parkinson's, a divorce, and falling into depression while unemployed, all at the same time. Cardenas, an El Paso native and Rancho Suarita resident, started working for Raytheon in 1996 as a temporary employee before moving to Arizona. He landed the job the day before his birthday, eventually working his way up to full-time engineering drafter. In time, Raytheon sent Cardenas, who already had degrees under his belt, to the U of A for a mechanical engineering degree. That's when, in his early 40s, he found out he had Parkinson's. Matter of fact, a professor of mine is the one who told me, "You need to be checked," he said. The professor's observation came when Cardenas couldn't complete an exam and his handwriting was illegible. Cardenas said he never noticed his shaking until the professor pulled him aside. And so I went to the doctor, my ex-wife took me, and this is the test, Cardenas said as he opened and closed his hands at eye level with fingers extended and pointing away. This is the test for Parkinson's. We're in the 21st century, and this is the test. His diagnosis came in 2008, 1 year before he graduated from the university. They couldn't ask me if I had Parkinson's, but by about 10 years, I was starting to shake more, he said. And they started realizing that people started talking, and I said, it's time to go and tell. And when I told them, less than a year, half a year later, I was gone. That was in 2016, and he eventually found himself divorced and living alone. I went from 200 pounds to 230 pounds because I didn't do anything. I was depressed, said Cardenas, who had a casual faith up to that point. And then one day I just realized and I said, she's not coming back. I got to move on. And I went, moved on, and I started listening, going back to the Lord, church, and started listening to him. And it opened a lot of doors. I was unemployed. I had zero income and was paying for this house. His first break came about a year after he found himself alone and unemployed with bills stacking up, but a renewed hope of faith. He qualified for funds for the now-ended Save Our Home Arizona program that would pay the last year of mortgage payments while he set up his disability income. It was like the Lord just zeroed in on me, start brand new, he said. I mean, that was faith. That was a blessing in disguise. Cardenas found an opportunity to share his knowledge with high school students looking to pursue a career in drafting and architecture. Business Partnership Coordinator P.J. Gomez with the Green Valley Sorita Chamber of Commerce connected Cardenas with the Intern Mentorship Program. He had known Cardenas for 18 years but didn't realize that he owned JJZ when he started calling looking for businesses to join the Elevate Ed AZ program that started locally in September. Cardenas loves his career and has found renewed meaning and welcome distraction on his Parkinson's progress. He also keeps keeping up active and busy with pickleball, recently joining an adaptive group that GVR Pickleball Club launched. He said the Lord didn't punish people, but life does. I was greedy with my time getting a degree and I didn't put family first, Cardenas said, noting a wish it were different today. I have to sit here and wait for it, Cardenas said, adding that it can take 45 minutes to an hour for the full effect after he waits for a pill to kick in. That's the time I talk to the Lord. I sit down and relax and tell him, come on in, you're next, or he tells me, I'm next. Green Valley News for Monday, May 4th, Mark DeGroff. Here at Sun Sounds of Arizona, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for more Sun Sounds programming, and until Wednesday, take care.